Greetings, Earth explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you're about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. The solar wind is a blazing 629 kilometers per second out of a coronal hole of the sun. And just as we predicted, there was a beautiful aurora in Alaska, despite the full moon on the 14th. Despite a solar minimum, the sun is crisscrossed with gashes called filaments, which are magnetic rifts. These are the longest ever recorded. The SW Comet is heading for the Ring Nebula and will be visible in 13 giant pieces with a telescope on May 7th. Look for a fabulous meteor shower beginning May 12th or 13th. Some may be visible in broad daylight. We also want to welcome our AM affiliates who are carrying this broadcast live and those who will run it as a rebroadcast. You are the conduit through which we can reach the world with the greatest story on the universe. Remember, if it's not mainstream, it's on the BBS Radio Network. In the news, Defense Update issued an article describing a new force field that can protect vehicles and buildings against rockets, RPGs, and other kinetic devices. This technology has been tested hundreds of times in live fire situations, and will definitely change the battlefield forever. In addition, solid-state ceramic lasers have been released. These are capable of issuing a kilowatt-class beam without ever exhausting the laser crystal, the size of a piece of gum, by the way. Although only capable of short bursts and requiring 10 minutes of cooling between blasts, one pulse can melt a hole to an inch of metal. Such a pulse would vaporize a human target in milliseconds. We look for Star Wars-style capabilities in the next few years. Next week on X Squared Radio, we will have the incredible Tracy Twyman coming on the program. She will be presenting her research on Freemasonry and secret world societies that were responsible for the creation of America, no less, and will be posturing for another round of world dominion. Trust me, we are going to go places no other talk radio program has gone before. This is no conspiracy theory, my friends. This is the real thing. Don't miss next Sunday from 5 to 8 Eastern, right here on X Squared Radio. Also, don't forget that The Ark of Millions of Years, Volume 2, 2012, and The Harvest of the End Times is now in print. You can buy it everywhere, but if you want an autographed copy, there are two ways to get one. You can go to arkofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that with a K, like Noah's Ark, and you can order a copy. If you put in the code word Pluto, P-L-U-T-O, in the code box, you will get free shipping. Of course, you'll have to listen to this program to know that. Or you can come to Read More Books on the 22nd in Madisonville, Kentucky, in the mall, and I'll sign your book in person. We will get started at noon. If you want to stay current on our programs, guests, books, CDs, DVDs, and other outstanding stuff for your space, you can make x2-radio.com your favorite place on the web. We want to welcome all of our AM affiliates, of course, and your many requests that this program be placed onto XM and Sirius. Believe me, we believe everything we do will eventually affect the universe, that your efforts are having their effect, and I appreciate it. I'm glad you're listening, because tonight our guest is Brent Moyer. He graduated from the University of Illinois in electrical engineering. His distinguished career expanded his technical capabilities, and he was acknowledged as an e-commerce expert by IBM, an advanced futures trader, and an expert in multiple programming languages and database systems. He has personally amassed 32 United States patents for advancements in human interface recognition software, artificial intelligence applications, and data transmission protocols and analysis. Mr. Miller also went on to hold the highest technical executive positions in several New York-based Fortune 100 companies, including Gray Direct as the CTO and Bates Worldwide as the CTO. He now has a lifelong dedication to the Horizon Project research team, continually seeking truth, working with many of the world's most brilliant minds to unlock the big picture to our world. He focuses his time on advancing remote viewing as a skill and is personally responsible for advancements regarding remote viewing protocol and accuracy. Please welcome with me Brent Miller. How are things in Michigan tonight, Brent?
Bright and sunny. It's a change. Spring is here. Dr. Agnew, it's a pleasure to be on your show. I want to thank you.
Well, we appreciate you being here. I have a ton of questions, and I'm sure that our listeners do too. I want them to be able to get in on this by, they can call toll-free at 888-268-4313. I'm sure many of them have heard the term remote viewing, but I'm just about positive everyone has a misconception about it. This first hour, let's tell our listeners all about what it is, who can do it, and maybe we'll set aside some of the myths that people have about it. But first, I would like you to give us an update on the Horizon Project production. How soon will our listeners be able to obtain a DVD of the first episode?
Well, we're expecting the first episode of the Horizon Project to be shipping within the next few weeks.
Oh, that's awesome. So, how did you come up with your idea for the Horizon Project?
Well, my background is very technologically based, and it's very detail-oriented, coming from an engineering background. And I'm always seeking the truth. Like most people, we seek the truth, but I've really dedicated much of my life to it. Starting out in engineering. And the problem with trying to find the truth is you come up with so many different contradictory theories, opinions, and statements from every field, and these people in each field are also considered experts in their field. So where does one who is truly trying to find the answers when you have contradictory opinions from experts? Hence, the Horizon Project was born, where we would bring together experts in all these specialized fields, and as a group, a unified group of experts in each field, we would find out what is the truth, separating facts from opinions. And so that's how it was born.
Well, in view of your many outstanding contributions to the world already, why do you consider this project to be the most important work you have ever done?
By combining remote viewing and scientific research, there is absolutely no limits. It's mind-boggling when you can actually know something to be true versus opinion or versus theory. It is a feeling of that that you just can't let go. You can essentially understand anything you want to know. There is no limitations. The most important question of all to me is, like most people or some people, why are we here? What is life all about? And where are we heading? Do we have a purpose other than just merely existing? The Horizon Project, in addition to trying to answer a lot of scientific questions and pulling together information about technical issues scattered throughout our world, we also address very seriously these questions. And to me, these questions are the most important thing I could ever accomplish. I don't think there's anything more important to me than knowing where I've come.
Wow, so there's no limit to what people can visualize with this remote viewing.
No, there are very few limitations. We can get into the extremely minor limitations later on, but for all intents and purposes, there are no limitations. We use it in the Horizon Project as a tool. The research comes from the top scientists worldwide in various fields, and when we have discrepancies, to very quickly determine the discrepancies, we use remote viewing to point us in the right direction. We present it to the research team, the linguistics, the scientists, the experts on ancient cultures, and once the information is presented to them, they go, oh, I guess you're right. Yeah, that makes sense. And yet, we are using it as a tool, and it is accelerating the process of weeding through all the opinions faster than we ever imagined.
Yeah,
and so this is a very exciting project.
It's like a method of intelligence gathering?
That's exactly what it is. Remote viewing is intelligence gathering. But the source of intelligence has always been with us. People have always been able to access this. The ancient Chinese used to access it, and we are just now learning again that this information has always been available to us. And remote viewing is a protocol by which we can access, anybody can access this background information that is extremely accurate, precise, and doesn't have any opinion, and it does not have any hidden agendas. It's an amazing skill.
Hmm. You said there's a specific protocol. What is involved with that?
Well, remote viewing. Remote viewing is a skill. It's a skill that anybody can learn, and it gives you direct knowledge. It gives you the answers to anything you want to know about the past, present, or future, about any person, place, or thing. That, you have to step back and think about that for a moment. You can know anything you want to know about anything in the past or anything in the future. There's really no limitations as to what you can know. Everything is an open book to everyone, and it always has been. And the term remote viewing refers not so much to the knowledge that we can acquire, but to the protocol. It's just, the term remote viewing is, in fact, the protocol or the steps used to gather the information to this source of knowledge. Just like solving an algebra problem requires a student to follow a very precise sequence of steps to derive the algebraic solution, remote viewing has a sequence of steps that you follow that, when followed, gives you the answers to whatever question you're asking. You acquire the information in pieces that put together in a puzzle that form the answer to your question when you're finished with the protocol.
Well, I suppose you have to get pretty good at asking the question.
Like any skill, it takes practice. Even simple skills like typing. When you first start to learn to type, the teacher says, step one, put your fingers on the keyboard like this. You don't ask why, you just do it. Step two, your index finger hits these keys and you practice. And as you build those skills, other fingers come into play. Eventually, you're typing 30 words a minute. Same with remote viewing. It is a skill, a mental skill, following steps that, when practiced, like any other skill, takes practice to develop to be good at it. And it's a skill that any of us can learn, and we can actually learn it very quickly. Similar to the fact that any of us who really want to learn typing could learn typing. But it is a million times far more powerful and greater than any mundane task like typing. I'm not even sure why I made the comparison, except to say that it is a skill that any one of us can develop.
Well, I've had, some exposure to remote viewing, but I think it's all been the wrong exposure. I've seen some movies, and maybe I've read some books, and maybe you can help us bust some of the myths surrounding remote viewing. What isn't it?
Oh, okay. The term remote viewing was coined in the military about 30 years ago when it was first at Stanford Research Institute, and physicists were investigating how people could acquire background knowledge, background information. The term remote viewing, because of their lack of understanding of the process, they coined it that. Remote viewing itself is a misnomer. There is no actual viewing at all. It's not visual. It is not an altered state. These are other misconceptions. It's not an altered state. It is not an out-of-body experience. In fact, it's not an experience of any kind at all. That is the biggest misconception about remote viewers. Well, I don't want to get into that stuff. It's not for me. I don't feel comfortable. It is simply an attention management skill. It's a skill that anyone can learn, but the skill provides access to the unlimited pure source of information with no deception or hidden agenda. You mentioned, being characterized by a movie, for example. You know, a recent, you know, silly movie that came out was called Suspect Zero, starring Ben Kingsley.
Wow.
About 2 years ago. Yeah, and I don't know if you saw that, but it was a Hollywood movie that came out, and they took the concept of remote viewing where an FBI agent was trained who was obsessed in tracking down a serial killer, but they portrayed the remote viewer and remote viewing as an experience in which the FBI agent couldn't shut off the data that he collected, and it drove him crazy. This is not at all the case. It is not an experience, and, you know, you don't go crazy. It's simply, it would be the equivalent of saying, if I put this movie in my TV and I watch the movie, it's not really an experience. You're sitting there in the comfort of your couch all the time, but you can get totally wrapped up with the storyline of the movie, but you're always sitting there in the couch. The movie gave the wrong impression of what remote viewing was, but Hollywood, you know, they needed to make it exciting and they needed to make it a suspense thriller, so they threw in these twists. But they actually did show one legitimate part of remote viewing. They showed that it was a tool used by the intelligence gathering agencies, and they also showed that it provides very precise and accurate information.
So, I guess what you're saying is that a viewer can, I guess you can see past time and space to events or locations, and then he records those results as he gets his answers?
Yeah, that's actually absolutely true. It provides you some insight as to the source of the incredible knowledge, but I'll talk on that later. Using remote viewing, there really are no secrets. You can see past events or locations, and you can also see future events. There's really no mysteries and no theories that you can't uncover immediately. If you think about it, this is really a scary topic because literally it's a world without secrets. If you're a remote viewer and you learn to remote view, you can truly know anything you wish to know.
That sounds kind of scary. I mean, you're saying no matter who does it, as long as they do the technique correctly, they always come up with the same picture?
That is absolutely correct. There are a few minor exceptions, and that has to do with the cue itself. There's a few more other minor exceptions, but they are minor. For example, if I cued something saying, just as an example, maybe it would excite your audience a little, and I did this, and this is a real target. When I visited Las Vegas, I thought it would be pretty exciting to find gold, just as a joke. You know, people would probably bury gold in the desert. So my cue was, my name near a significant source of gold. Accessible, obtainable, you know, etc. In other words, if I went and walked to it, I could legally obtain it by just taking it or buying the property or whatever. So it wasn't going to be like a stolen event. And it pointed me exactly 23.5 miles south by southwest of where I was standing. And so hopped in the car, go straight there, and with one of the world's most accurate metal detectors, the entire side of the mountain has gold dust in it. It's a perfect place for companies like Newmont to like rip out the side of the mountain. So my idea in my cue was significant. That's to answer your question. If you build into the cue subjective type words and they're tailor-made for specific people, like that particular cue for me was, my idea of significant is millions of dollars. It's not going to give me a gold coin laying somewhere. It's going to take me to the nearest source of millions of dollars of gold that I could legally obtain, which was a dug-up mountain that I had access to if I wished. But, you know, other than areas of subjectivity, there are very few other exceptions. the source of the information, doesn't care who you are, what you believe, what your agenda is. You ask a question, and you learn the skill of remote viewing, you get the answer, and it's very precise.
Hmm. So I guess what you're saying is that people don't necessarily have to have a special gift or be born with any special talent. They can actually learn these techniques, and when they follow them carefully, by the science, by a technology, they can come up with these answers.
I can see where people might think they need to be gifted or have some sort of special natural born talent, but no. For example, people keep relating something like this to psychics because they can't compare it to anything else in their history. They can't comprehend how this is possible. I am as psychic as a stone. I have a psychic bone in my body. Yet I am a good remote viewer only because I learned the protocol. And anyone who learns the protocol can immediately produce better results, way better results than the best natural psychics that have ever lived, if you want to compare your data with their data.
Well, I guess an engineer would be a natural person to do that because you're so process-oriented in the first place.
I suppose that is true, but anybody who can follow directions can do this. You don't have to be an engineer. Every walk of life, every age group, anyone who has just a desire to learn this and who can follow directions can do this.
Well, you almost make it sound as easy as baking cookies.
If you learn the skill, it is actually easy. Once you learn the skill, like any other skill, takes a lot of practice and work, but the results and the rewards are just beyond mind-boggling. You can know anything you want to know.
Wow, that sounds absolutely amazing. In our first book that we wrote, The Arc of Millions of Years, Volume 1, we described the clinical work that was done by the U.S. government with EST and maybe even out-of-body experiences and maybe even what they called remote viewing in those days. And there were thousands of records of people with remarkable gifts to not only see events in the past and future, but telekinetically alter those events in the future and the past. Do you think the government is still interested in these subjects?
Dr. Agnew, without a doubt, there's no doubt at all that our government has a serious commitment to this data collection protocol. After all, it cuts through all the opinions and speculation. But like our government, they have many various methods of data collection. They combine this protocol with other traditional methods, such as tapping communications line, overhead satellite photography, logistic movements of trains and shipments in other countries, collecting it all together to come up with an overall intelligence report to provide on a particular subject. There is no doubt in my mind. In fact, the government, as fearful as they are about remote viewing, they honestly cannot live without it. One government official, high-ranking official, when the remote viewing team was getting well underway in the 80s, who was introduced to the team itself and saw what they did, just sat back in awe and in terror made the comment, man should not know these things until after they're dead. But at the same time, they realize they can know anything they want to know about their enemy. They can investigate any information they want about future plans, success or failures of potential projects they're on. But at the same time, they're afraid of it because these viewers, as valuable as the information is, there are no secrets. If the viewers turn their attention on the actual people in our government, they could know everything. There are no secrets with this, and anyone can learn this. Now that the cat is out of the bag, thanks to a few brave initial remote viewers and people in the intelligence community who brought it out in the 80s, late 80s, we now have this ability in the civilian world. I don't believe this type of technology, this type of information, should ever have been kept secret. But of course, like, I suppose if I had anything to do with the government and I discovered this, I'd want to bring it inside too. But I'm just glad it made it to the general public.
And you're saying that these abilities, just about everybody possesses these abilities, and they can, with this training, experience a picture or a place or a time. And I guess, I think I heard you say that ancient civilizations had this skill as well, and there seems to be some records that support that. And did we just forget how to do it, or was it wiped out, or did the people learn something that they needed to about their future and take action, which kind of got them out of the way, and we don't have them anymore? I assume these ancient civilizations had this ability.
Oh, I have no doubt that they had abilities similar to this. They wouldn't have called it remote viewing, and in fact, I think their abilities greatly exceeded our ability. Their ability to do mathematics and what we're discovering, the more we delve into our past civilizations, and the better linguistics ancient texts become in the translations, the more we realize that civilization keeps rewriting itself. Such as, who knows, 1,000 years from now, they may look at us and say, well, was New York City a myth or a legend? So, you know, should civilization itself get rewritten and human evolution start over again? But the more they dig into the concept of New York City and the artifacts they are able to bring up and some of the potential records that survive, they'll realize that, wait a minute, we might have been a real civilization with the ability to, you know, build tools and create a civilization similar to what they'll have in 1,000 years. We always think we're superior. Today we think we are the tip of the technological mountain, if you will. But there is evidence that suggests that our civilization today was just as technologically proficient in the past many times as it is today, but keeps getting wiped out and rewritten. The knowledge that those civilizations portrayed and presented that they had greatly surpassed ours, and they knew things that we are only beginning to discover in the last couple of decades, for example, in astronomy and physics. And they acquired their knowledge from somewhere, and there are records pointing to the fact that they, quote, spoke with, had knowledge sources that provided them direct knowledge from the gods. Ancient Chinese, thousands of years ago, referred to this background information as the Akashic Records, for example.
What records?
Akashic Records. And they had this impression that the records were static. They were static throughout all of time. Anything that you wanted to know in past, present, or future, you could know by simply accessing. They never wrote down how they accessed the Akashic Records. Today, remote viewers call that same source of information the Matrix. It's the same source. However, we know more than what, well, we don't know more than what they did, but we believe we know more than what they wrote about what they did. We know that the information is not static. In fact, it's dynamic and intelligent. And there are specific cues and questions you can ask that will tell you specifically how intelligent the source is.
Well, do you think if they had these abilities, and it appears as though the edifices like temples and complex calendar systems and warning systems that they put together, like Stonehenge and different star viewing systems, it looks like somehow they knew that impending cataclysms were gonna come, and come they did, and it might explain why it appears many of them left without a trace. They planned on leaving.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree. In fact, any prior civilization, including our own, that could see an upcoming global catastrophe, in my opinion, would be morally obligated to do two things. First, they'd have to save themselves. They're just not going to sit there and watch it happen. They would have to save themselves in whatever capacity they were able. Howbeit, as little as they were able to save themselves, they would do that. Secondly, with access to the information and knowing what was going to happen to them, they would have to warn the next civilizations of the disaster if they had time to do so. And by doing so, they would have to create something that would survive the disaster thousands of years later so that other civilizations, when they came across it, could say, what is this? And hopefully be able to determine the meaning and the intent behind the previous civilization. So I do believe that this has happened before, and I do believe that they have built things in order to try to show us that this is going to occur again.
And maybe by next civilizations, you mean us.
Yes.
Just leave something behind for us so that we would know not only did they have the ability to do this, and maybe they didn't have it ironed down to a protocol, scientifically, technologically, the way your group has done. But maybe they, at least the leaders, or their scribes, or their priests, or their scientists, knew how to do it, and they were able to leave something for us to at least clue in our curiosity that you don't really need an orbiting telescope to see these things in the center of the galaxy.
Right. Right, I agree completely.
Well, I'm interested in the Akashic records, in the actual source of the information, because information in any system of energy, let's say, there's got to be an intrinsic truth. That is to say, there's got to be some anchor or element that cannot change in order to define all other things. If it wasn't that way, then the system would just be pure chaos, and it wouldn't just be matter unorganized. It would mean that matter could not exist, because there would be no atomic particles to form the first atoms, and dissimilar particles in such a chaotic system, if they came together, why they just annihilate each other on contact, instead of combining to form atoms and molecules and complexes to make up a universe. So there's got to be some kind of unalterable truth. For instance, the composition of a proton. We don't get much variety in composition of protons. They vary a little bit in weight, but their reactivity, chemically, is absolutely reliable. So these the Akashic records, or the source of this information, it implies that there is some true and unchanging energy in the universe.
I'm not sure how, but this brings up areas literally of dimensions. What we do know, let me answer that question this way. What we do believe, based on all the evidence that we're able to gather with no discrepancy or contrary evidence that we're able to gather, we do believe that the source of the information is outside of time. Now, that is actually an incredibly large statement. It's massive, in fact, because we are humans living sequentially in time. We know the past because it happened yesterday. We don't know the future because it didn't happen yet. However, we believe very strongly that the source of the information is outside of time, meaning whatever question you ask from our perspective, past, present, or future, that event has already happened to the source of the information outside of time. So if you ask about what will I be doing 23 minutes before I die, whenever that was, the source of the information says, well, here. Because it's already happened, as far as it's concerned. So that there is no discrepancy anywhere. There is an absolute single logical event. I know this causes paradoxes in some people's views, but we can talk about that if you'd like to in a moment. But
well, at least the way you described it, it doesn't really present that much of a paradox, because the paradox occurs when you assume that all possibilities occur. And if that was true, then different people that viewed the same event in the future, let's say, would all receive different answers. But they don't. They receive the same answers. So the way you're describing it, all possibilities do not occur. Only one possibility occurs. However, in the arrow of time, physicists, we talk about the arrow of time pointing forward and backwards, and mathematically, there's only one future. There's only one truth. So the paradox is a little simpler. It's not like going in the past and murdering your parents so that you couldn't be born, or even more paradoxical, going back and falling in love with a woman who later becomes your grandmother once you're in the future. That's the paradoxes that physicists wrestle with all the time, and it's kind of a popular myth, and it's sort of a dog chasing its tail around and around, but the fact that these remote viewing teams and members on that team get the same answer means that, in large part, only one future happens, even if the event is viewed and then avoided. The avoidance can be seen as well, can't it?
You raised an interesting question, and I'd like to add a minor twist to the possibilities that we actually see also in remote viewing. It is, for your last question, it's not possible to remote view a future that is then avoided, because you would not be able to remote view it and then avoid it.
Right.
That doesn't happen. Whatever you remote view, that is what happens. Let me digress, and I'll get back. I would like to get back to this statement in just one moment, but I want to digress with a very, very short example that has nothing to do with remote viewing, but I think it's one that the audience will relate to. There is a modern-day, supposedly, psychic prophet, and remember what I just said about psychic people. They're intuitive, but their degree of accuracy is very, very small. This gentleman's name is Nostradamus. Quite a number of people have heard of him, and it was about 300 years ago. He was invited to a rich man's house, and the rich man wanted to play a trick on him. And at a dinner party where he was going to serve a lot of guests, he had a white pig and a black pig. And he asked Nostradamus, "Which pig am I going to serve?" Nostradamus immediately replied, "You're going to serve the black pig for supper." And he goes, "Great." He immediately tells the cook, "Kill the white pig right now." And he kills the white pig in front of him, and he cuts it up, puts it in the oven, and frees the black pig. All right, now they're having dinner. And he says, "Nostradamus, which pig are we eating?" "Well, we're eating the black pig." He calls in the chef and says, he goes, "Nope, we're not." He's trying to embarrass him in front of his rich guests. He calls in the chef and says, "Chef, tell everybody which pig we're eating." "Well, we're eating the black pig, you see, because when I pulled the pig out of the oven to baste, the pig fell on the floor, it got all messed up, and we barely had enough time to run out there, find the black pig, grab it, kill it, and cook it. I was so lucky that he was nearby, otherwise we wouldn't even have this meal." So basically, if you get the source of the information, even though it may seem future to us, it has already happened. Now, if the source of the information creates a paradox, experiments have been done with this. In other words, if you get information that, and this is where our paradox comes in, that suggests that you could stop the event, such as a neighbor getting into a car wreck, then you don't actually get the information. When you ask it specifically with the intent of telling the neighbor to avoid a certain thing, you won't get the information. But I can say more about that later. But what I wanted to get to was there is only one future event. Now, here's the part that I need to give your audience credit, and these people who say there are multiple future possibilities, because we see that in remote viewing as well. We see millions of possibilities. However, only one is solidified and unfolds, and it's that one that is returned to us in our information. But at every moment in time, we have written and solidified everything that happened in the past. For every second we move forward in time, it's solidified, but there are still millions of possibilities yet to come. But once we make a decision, because we have free will, and every person on Earth makes their decision for that second, that moment in time is locked. So you end up with a chronological future that is locked but it's only locked as you make each moment in time. Let me give you a remote viewing, something you can do with remote viewing that just probably one of the most mind-boggling questions you could ask in remote viewing. For myself, I'm going to use myself as an example. What is the most optimum thing I could do in my entire life, my optimum future trajectory? The source of the information is not static, as the Akashic, as the Chinese and the Akashic records analogy suggests. The source of the information is extremely dynamic. It will actually project out all the millions of future possibilities for me, all the interactions I will have with every possible person, and then it will take the optimum solution for my future history and outline a path for how I should, quote, live my life to make my life optimum, whatever this word optimum means. And then that's the answer I get. Okay, this is your optimum future. I still have free will in order to do it or not do it. But the possibility is projected out. Now, if you ask a person what is their personal trajectory, in other words, what will they do, not versus what they should do, you get something totally different. You get precisely what they do for the rest of their life until they die. So the possibilities are there until you make your choice. We still have free will, though. I'm sorry if that's a long-winded explanation, but it's a very exciting subject to me because you can use this because the source of the information is intelligent and loving and has no hidden agenda. You can use remote viewing to really help your life, help your family, help every possible decision. Suppose you have a choice of picking three different jobs, and each of them seems perfectly acceptable to you. Okay, what is the optimum job? Well, the source of the information knows that if you select job number two, in 6 months, your daughter will get hit by a car because of certain situations that will occur 6 months down the road, so it will rule that one out, and you would have no idea of the future, but it does. So this is what you can use remote viewing for ultimately.
Well, I guess that's what I meant earlier when I said, I guess you've got to be really skilled at asking the right questions, because what you're saying here, and I'm trying to gather it in, is that given enough time and enough practice, all knowledge is attainable, you know, given enough time to make the search. But you said that the knowledge comes from a source that has no hidden agenda, but most people that I know that do research have, if not a hidden agenda, an open agenda. We form a theory and then we make a hypothesis for disproving that theory. So we have some preconceptions, and you know, most people impose their own preconceptions upon a question that they would ask like that to out there somewhere, if it's God or if it's a saint or an angel or a force that they're seeking knowledge from, they're going to impose their own feelings on that. For instance, you said you were talking about this optimum trajectory, like instead of asking, you know, what is the best job for me to have, you would impose your own viewpoint on that and say, when am I going to become the greatest orthodontist in the United States?
I see. This actually is one of when you learn remote viewing, there's literally three parts you have to learn. There is how to formulate the question, and this is what you're referring to.
Right.
It's really, really important, and it's stressed incredibly to a very great level that you do not impose your own ideas. The second part of remote viewing is the skill itself, the protocol, learning the skill and following directions, and to a point where it literally becomes a second nature to you to remote view. The third part is looking at the data and analyzing the data. But the first part you're relating to is very important, that the questions are cued correctly with no preconceived notions. If for instance, my a friend of mine or a loved one of mine is sick, and I want to know the best possible treatment or cure. I don't say the person's name / optimum presently available treatment for this particular disease, because in fact, he or she may have something much worse that will kill the person that I don't know about, that they don't know about. You just simply ask, remove all the preconceived notions from the queue, optimum presently available treatment / cure. And the source of the information then knows precisely what you want, and it will give you the most currently available treatment for that person at this particular moment in time that will do the absolute best good for that person. And once they have that, then you redo the queue and you get the next thing. And if you do this over and over again and you fix the person up, you finally get to the point where they're just all you get is, you know, good fruit and vegetables, and they're eating right and they're exercising.
Hmm.
So you don't want to give any preconceived notions in your cues. Let me give you a really good example. The cues also have to be structured so that you don't impose your intent, because intent is meaningless. And when you think about it, your intent must actually be meaningless, because if 1,000 people over 1,000 years ask the same question, they must all get the same answer. So all of these people scattered over 1,000 years, they all have different reasons for asking it, and they all think they're asking different questions. But in fact, if they actually formulate the question the exact way, the source of the information must give the exact answer to every single person. So their intent is meaningless. Remember, the source is outside of time. That negates your intent. So if for example, and here's a good example of intent being meaningless. I want to know, for example, optimum zero-point energy design. All right? And what I get when I do the session, you do get a design. You do get a number of people in a laboratory looking over a box in a very complex, energetic environment with all the necessary scientific instruments and the data relating to the zero-point energy thing. But there's a problem. My intent was today. Is anybody on Earth actually looking at it and working in that field today, and does anyone actually have this? The source of the information is outside of time. The answer today wasn't in my question. Yes, that exists, but it doesn't exist for 1,000 years. So the question has to be very carefully structured. I hope that answers.
I understand what you mean. So let's just assume for a moment that the world's best remote viewing teams work for the government, and it's probably true.
I think that's a good assessment, yes.
The preconceived notions or the intent that they have in how they're applying remote viewing are pretty task-oriented. For instance, I'll just throw one out there. I don't know if there's an answer to it, but suppose the remote viewing teams were saying, all right, where is Osama bin Laden? And where is he going to be on this day? And then you just send your troops there. But that would be the military intent being imposed on the question. What I guess they really should ask is, at what point in the future are we going to catch up with Osama bin Laden and kill him?
That is also a preconceived notion, because if a person cues that way, and the future does not actually unfold that way, they get nonsense data. Nonsense results, because if we don't actually capture him and kill him per that statement, and that's the way it's cued, you get nonsense back. Basically, this is not real. It doesn't happen. What you can do, you see, when the first attack started, just to be on the subject for a moment, there was doubt whether Osama bin Laden was alive or dead. Well, you know, every remote viewer, even your audience who learns remote viewing, every single one of them can pick up a pen and paper, run through the protocol, and in less than 5 minutes, they know for an absolute fact he's alive. He's alive, he's doing well, he's surrounded by certain types of buildings and certain types of people in a desert environment. Remote viewers have no trouble finding that out instantly. And as far as where he is, yes, you can find him with remote viewing. I can't speak for the government's actual desire to locate him. That's a political question, and I really can't talk about political issues. I tend to avoid those type of questions.
Sure,
and
course.
I don't give my opinions. But I can tell you, so that your audience can determine for themselves, the viability of remote viewing to locate a person like that. We are currently finishing up a missing child case. This is a child case that Major Ed Dames and his team have been working on only for the last few days. And we have located the child literally with two separate sources moving into the child's current location with 150 feet, using the entire planet as the playing field, so to speak. Both sources move into the child's location with 150 feet of 4 days of remote viewing. Now, if non-military teams can do that in just a matter of days, then that shows you the true power of what remote viewing can really do. And what the government is using it for and what their political agenda is, I cannot speak for it. I can only say what we as civilians can do it for. And by the way, I must also say that even though we're civilians, we do have an incredibly gifted instructor who came out of the military, who brought the skill out of the military, Major Ed Dames, and he heads this particular team. So a lot of the knowledge came directly from the military.
Well, now there's people that ask me this question when comparing remote viewers against, say, someone that's naturally psychic. What evidence is there that these protocols, these remote viewing protocols, produce better results than, say, someone who is naturally psychic?
Somebody who's naturally psychic, people know that psychic people are real and legitimate, but they're not given much credence for much, only because they're off more times than they're right. And they don't know when they're off, and they don't know when they're on, because every time they relate information, it's always related as if they're on. But those few times that they are on, they're just dead on, and it's exciting to see that, because you step back and the world steps back and says, how'd they do that? How did they know?
And that's why they get the press.
Yeah, that's why they get the press. But they're off 99% of the time. The difference is remote viewers are actually on target 100% of the time. I say that tongue-in-cheek. You'll have to bear with me why I reiterate what I mean by that. You give a remote viewer a target, they don't go off. They are on the target 100% of the time. Not 1% like a psychic, but 100%. But while they're on that target, because they're human, as they're acquiring data, their analytical mind and creative imagination mess with the data as they're writing it down, so that only 80% of the data they write down is accurate. So if you take two remote viewers and you look at each remote viewer independently, 80% of each person's data is accurate. But if you overlap the data and only look at overlapping data, then you have much greater reliability, up into high 90s. If you have a team of remote viewers, you have nearly 100% accuracy. So this is why remote viewing is so powerful. Let me give you a very quick example of what I mean, so that your audience has a clear understanding of what I mean by 100% on target and 80% accurate. Let's say a blind target, meaning the remote viewers have no clue as to what the target is. And let's say it's just a simple photograph of a desert scene. One remote viewer in 20 minutes will say, okay, what I have here is I have a cactus with a stone, a bird sitting on it, and there's a mountain range in the background. The second remote viewer will say, I have a cactus, I have a turtle, a bird, and a mountain in the background. Well, the second remote viewer turned the stone into a turtle. It's really a stone. So, but if you look at the overlapping data, throw out the stone and the turtle, they were both on target, but they didn't get the whole picture. They missed the stone or the turtle, whichever it was. But remote viewing is a self-correcting process because the data is real. You can then retarget the stone or the turtle and see exactly what it is. Oh, it is a stone. It has this crystalline matrix. It came out of that volcano over there 10 million years ago, etc. So the more effort you put and the more you want to know about the target, the more information you get, and any misconceived impressions you had in the first place are weeded out. It is self-correcting, so it's incredibly powerful. That's what I mean by always on target, but only 80% accurate.
Well, I want to go into a lot more detail on this. Our first hour is already gone. It only takes a few minutes on this program. Let me take about a little bit of time to address some commercials. You can take about a 3.5-minute break, and then we'll have a musical interlude, and we'll come right back with Brent Miller, remote viewing expert and host of the Horizon Project on X Squared Radio. One of the things that we have learned from our many emails that we get is that there are many listeners to this program who are educators. Well, we have recently added a great affiliate for you, the Academic Superstore. It's the place where you can buy software, neat tools and gadgets, and even supplies, such as calculators and iPod peripherals, at huge discounts. All you have to do is click the Academic Superstore sign at X Squared Radio and start saving. Now, people are always looking for something inexpensive and unique to give people they love. Well, now there is a way to give a gift that not only says how long you will love them, but it allows you to help keep the planet green and growing. Tree Givers is the company that will plant a tree on public land somewhere in the 50 states and provide your special person with a beautiful certificate of that placement. This has become one of the most popular gift sites in the world. And because of their love for the Earth, they are changing the world. So visit Tree Givers at X Squared Radio and see if you can find a gift for your special person. Have you ever thought about owning a telescope? I mean a really good telescope. Like right now would be a wonderful time to own a Coronado solar telescope. There are some very fascinating things happening on the sun right now. And if you have never looked at a live picture of the sun through a Coronado scope, you have not really experienced solar astronomy. Well, at the Discovery Store, you can find the world's best telescopes at great discounts and free shipping. And they have come a long way, you know. Most of the comets discovered in the last 50 years were found by amateurs. You see, all those big telescopes are contracted for years to come by government grants. They're not looking for near-Earth objects. Who knows? You might just save the planet. So plan a trip to the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. And one last item. Did you know that 11 of the 12 sets of footprints on the moon were made by Eagle Scouts? It's true. Well, now the first footprint on the moon has been replicated in a limited edition plaque that would make the perfect gift for a court of honor. Maybe you need something special for your office or your library at home. This high-quality plaque can add that something special that lets people know how excited you are that we are returning to the moon. So visit Countdown Creations at X Squared Radio today and order your limited edition First Step on the Moon plaque. And we will be back after a 48-second musical interlude with X Squared Radio. And welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X-Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, and our guest tonight is Brent Miller. We are talking about the subject of remote viewing, and we're going to, later on in the last hour, we'll talk about how that relates to the Horizon Project and how monumental this work is becoming. And we'll also tell you how you can learn how to become a remote viewer, how you can hone your skills and access the tools that you need in order to enhance your strengths in these areas. Because we want you to know that you don't have to be a super genius or a psychic or expert at ESP or anything like that to become a remote viewer. There is an established, well-thought-out, well-organized technology and protocol system that you can learn, and this is the guy that we can talk to get this to work for you. In our last hour, we were talking about the difference between government teams, which we admitted are the most skilled teams in the world, just, I guess, by nature of their being funded and having the time and money to spend on trial and error to get the protocol in the first place. And we were comparing that against someone who, say, is just naturally psychic. And what we stated was that a psychic in the press might be accurate 1% of the time, that one famous percent of the time, like Gene Dixon or someone. But a remote viewer, a skilled remote viewer, and a team of two or three are right 100% of the time. And that's just something that boggles my mind. If a team of skilled remote viewers were employed to provide intelligence information, just, you know, about war, about strategy, about placement of assets, about, you know, events that are going to happen, but yes, the events are going to happen, and you're saying that we can't prevent them, but we can maybe, you know, move people out of the way where that event is going to happen. Is this the kind of goal that we're shooting for?
Well, I think, now, here I'm speculating with what little I know. And I know an incredible amount about remote viewing, but I'm referring to what little I know about the government. And with what little I know about the government and intelligence, how remote viewing would be utilized by them. It's a matter of cueing or providing the correct question. Since you know that if you get an answer, it's a fait accompli, it already happened, you obviously don't want an answer of an event that already happened that you want to stop. So you would alter the question to be something, say, similar to, I'm not going to go into the queuing protocol, but the question in layman's terms would basically be, what upcoming terrorist act can I prevent? Period. Then you would get an answer that would be preventable. Then you could take action to prevent it. Instead of saying, what is the next terrorist act that will, you know, kill lives on the U.S. mainland? Well, what's the point of getting that information? You can't stop it anyway. Because if you got it, it's already happened. So I do believe that those are the type of questions that the intelligence community would use in order to cue appropriate type of questions. However, you also have to understand that the way that intelligence is gathered in the community, FBI, military, CIA, there are many channels of intelligence. There's the, if they have this remote viewing unit, could be a black ops unit to protect their identity. They also have satellite, wiretapping, monitoring millions of radio communications every second, analyzing the web, ground troops, transport shipments are analyzed. So you have multiple sources coming from all different directions collected in all these various pods, All of these pods generate a report about a particular subject they're asked to investigate. All of these reports go up to an analytical team. The analytical team looks at all the data from all the sources. Remember, the remote viewing team is a single source.
Right.
You must have collaborating information from multiple sources. So even if the remote viewing team is dead on, if they don't have satellite overhead photography or intercepted communications, for example, showing the same things, then action is not taken. So the success of remote viewing itself is very clear in the civilian world because we don't go through that type of extent. You know, we can take action immediately on anything we find. But in the military intelligence community, it has to correlate with a lot of other different sources, which may not be able to provide any information on those particular subjects. However, remote viewing has been given, incredible volumes of credit while it was in the military branch on certain projects that were assigned to it that only remote viewing provided the information on. For instance, the largest Coast Guard drug bust in the history of this country was a result of the military remote viewers.
Wow.
They were accidentally, I say, given credit because it was accidentally leaked out that this team provided all the key information, time, place, date, types of shipments, boats, everything, to the Coast Guard. Coast Guard didn't know the real source of the information. They, when they did the bust and discovered what they actually had, they wrote basically a thank you letter back. You know, there's no way we could have done this without this. How is it even physically possible that anybody could know this? Anyway, little things like that leak out to show of their incredible success as a military team. But in generalities, that type of information isn't normally available. Most of that is still classified. And I'm sure everything today is considered top secret. And I have no doubt that they're using it intensely, but for what purpose, I wouldn't know.
Well, I guess the logical question for me is, all right, we admit that the government, maybe all governments, or certainly the largest governments, are using remote viewing teams to give them some kind of intelligence advantage. But what efforts are being made to encourage civilian remote viewing teams to form and to begin using those in an unclassified manner to help the people find their optimal trajectory or avoid being caught up as collateral damage in some event that has already happened, although in the future, and now we're in the past of that event, just waiting for it to occur. What efforts are being made to form civilian teams?
Major Ed Dames has created a DVD learning course so that anyone can learn it, and he has made it available. You can actually go to the website and learn about the course. It's learnrv.com. It is a very structured protocol series where you put it in your DVD set, and you actually sit in front of your television, and you are actually learning the remote viewing protocol with other students, with feedback to, as you compare your results that you do right along with the rest of the students, with the feedback that you get to see how you're doing, and then you learn and compound on the various lessons in each of the DVDs. It's a 30-day course, and it really teaches you the basics, and it's a total skill that anybody can learn. There are thousands of people that are learning it now, and we're being flooded in with, miraculous things they're coming up with. It is changing people's lives. This is the best known course that I know of exists today that teaches remote viewing in such a very simple, structured protocol without all the hype and without all the fluff and the mysticism that people associate with remote viewing. The biggest problem to getting people to learn remote viewing is to get them by their misconceptions that you covered in the first hour.
Exactly.
When I was first introduced to remote viewing, I was a total skeptic. I said, you know, this is ridiculous. There is no way. This is pure insanity, especially as an engineer. I'm very analytical. It didn't fit with my picture of life. It made no sense. But, you know, why in the world would the government and the FBI and the CIA put down tens of millions of dollars for research and make it a classified project unless there was something to it? They're not stupid. I had to find out what that was. That's how I got involved, and that's what literally blew me away when I realized that this was real and, you know, somebody like me, anybody could learn this. So trying to get over the stigma that this is not a psychic experience, it's not an experience of any kind, it's a skill we all can learn, that's the first step. And I'm hoping that, like, this radio show helps, because the information that people can obtain to help their lives is just, you know, it's without value. There's no value that can be assigned to the knowledge that people can gather from this to help their lives and their families' lives. So Major Ed Dames, this course at learnrv.com, is the single source of information that I would recommend. And he also provides unlimited online support for anybody who has questions. And he has a online form for the students as well.
And what was that website again?
It's www.learnrv.com. And it is a 30-day course that anybody can pick up and learn it. And I want to give you an idea. When I say anybody, we can elaborate on that just a little bit later, but I want to give one example. I'll give an easier example. A sweet young lady, my girlfriend's daughter, 10 years old, Savannah, very sweet girl. She wanted to learn remote viewing, and I thought remote viewing was like, well, it's like algebra along that line. You need to be kind of like in high school. That's my thinking. You have to be able to follow directions. But when I gave her targets, and my targets to her weren't real-world targets, like real questions we'd want to ask, because you have to start out with knowns. You learn the skill. Once you learn the skill, then you can ask any question you want with the confidence that you're doing it right and you're getting the answer that to the question you ask. So when we start out with knowns, I start out with pictures, and I would put a picture in an envelope and, you know, say, okay, what's in here? And she would run off and do her remote viewing session, and 10 minutes later saying, it's such and such, and sure enough, open up the picture of National Geographic's picture, and she was right all the time. As much as a 10-year-old could be right, you know, it's very vague and cutely drawn, but you could tell she was dead on every time. To tell you how accurate that anybody can learn this, and she's not psychic in the least bit. She's just a happy-go-lucky 10-year-old, very sweet girl. I had an envelope in my hand. I had no idea what was in that envelope because it was junk mail that I just brought in from outside. She says, give me a target. And I say, go do a target. You know, I don't bother me. Go do a target. But I was holding in my hand an envelope. And that's what her mind is used to seeing when I say, go do a target. So I threw the junk mail on the counter. She goes off and does the target, comes back 10 minutes later and, you know, says, this is it. And I'm looking at it. I go, what is that big rectangle with another rectangle on top with all those, like, lightning bolt lines everywhere? She says, oh, that's your Palm Pilot. And I stop. I go, oh. So what are all those, like, lines all over the display? She says, I don't know, but they're supposed to be there. And then she laughs, giggles, and bounces off. So I'm bewildered now, right? No one knew that my Palm Pilot, I dropped it a month earlier, and I had dropped it and shattered the display, and I sent it off to California to get repaired. Only an hour later did I realize there was that junk mail, so I grabbed it, opened it up. It was an estimate for the repair of my display on my Palm Pilot from the company in California. Now, she was on target, but her lexicon, because she's a little girl, could only say, that's your Palm Pilot, basically, with a broken display. I don't know what it is, but that's the answer. A professional remote viewer would say, that's an estimate to repair your Palm Pilot with a broken display. That's the difference. Now, that's just an example of how anybody can learn remote viewing. So, and it's just an amazing skill. The knowledge is there. In fact, it is very difficult to learn remote viewing without actually getting into subjects of religion. And the reason I say that is because anything we don't understand in the physical world, anything we can't touch, we seem to assign some sort of spirituality to it or religion. And because you can't actually touch remote viewing and the source of data comes outside of remote viewing, we tend to assign religious terms to it. But there are a lot.
What I found is that in past history, societies had no compunction about assigning deity or holiness or some level of glory to this kind of ability to see or pre-see or to figure out problems or translate things. But modern societies, we consider ourselves very sophisticated and we don't need to rely on spiritual inputs in order to be wise and to gain knowledge. So we've got kind of a prejudice against it, kind of a, well, as though there are forces that are working against us, realizing that these sources are out there in the first place, but that the fact that this knowledge can be available. I mean, the humanist philosophy is there's only the here and the now, and the forces that are working on the here and now are the same forces that have been working forever. They have not changed. There's been no cataclysms or special causes. The way radiation decays now is the way it has always decayed. The amount of sunlight coming from the sun is the same as it's always been. And this is the humanist way of looking at things, that there is no way of seeing future events. But what you're saying is that with this skill, even a child can learn rudimentary skills that even with their limited lexicon in their mind, as far as you know what a feel for something would be, she probably didn't have that concept in her mind. Even with that limited amount, she could remote view. So you're saying that anyone, all people, no matter what their intention, be it good or evil, they can become sort of omniprescient. They can know the future and all the secrets of potential futures.
Actually, that is a scary thought, Brooks, that anybody good or evil can remote view. It's a true statement. The source of the information does not care about your agenda. It does not care what you believe, what you're going to do with the information, who you are. All it's responsible for, apparently, is answering the question in the absolute most perfect answer it can give that exists, because there is a single truth it gives out, with the proper context of the answer, because answers without context are meaningless.
Right.
So it actually, every answer comes with context. So that...
Well, this brings up an interesting situation.
Yeah.
Because those that either had the ability or who employed the people who had the ability that could do this remote viewing, since the knowledge is out there, it's accessible by everyone, no matter what their intention, no matter what they're going to do with the knowledge, governments, churches, religions have, throughout time, sought to destroy the competition so that only they knew what was going to happen so they could posture themselves to take advantage of it. And I've seen this throughout history when you have... Well, for instance, just look at the prophet Isaiah, for instance. His life was sought by family and friends and governments his entire life. He had to write his visions in code so that they could not figure out what he was saying so that they wouldn't kill him. And this is a perfect example. And the same thing happens today. If you were to... Let's say you were a financial advisor, remote viewer for a corporation. And although not employed as a remote viewer, you walked in and told your CEO, hey, the market in our particular area is going to crash on July 21st. What you do with that knowledge is up to you. And that company does that,
or repostures themselves based on the upcoming market crash, so they maybe avoid severe injury or financial crisis because of that, they have benefited from that knowledge. Well, that same kind of fame and fortune in past times has been sought out and destroyed. So the fact that our enemies have the ability to remote view, to see things that we see, they know the same occurrences are going to happen that we know. And they're trying to posture themselves to take advantage of it as well. And you can kind of see that. It's sort of strange and unexplained in the intelligence world, because we don't see that on the mainstream news, but we see major steps toward worldwide annihilation taking place almost daily on the news. And I can't believe that these, you know, remote viewers, it's getting by them. They're knowing that these things are going to happen. But it's not just the government remote viewing team. It's everybody that has this ability is receiving the same truth, right?
Absolutely. They all are receiving the information. The remote viewers, you receive the answer to the questions you ask. Now, whether they're asking the same questions, I don't know. But you do pick up anomalies in questions that you ask with unexpected results. And every remote viewer who gets unexpected results, they actually basically remote view those results to find out why I didn't get what I expected or why I got this anomaly. If I may be so bold to give you an example, I mean, I think the examples are very important because it shows people what remote viewing truly is and how unbelievably important it is for their lives. During a remote viewing course that Major Dames was giving personally, about 3 years ago, I believe it was, and this was in front of brand new students who were just sitting down to learn remote viewing. This is the very second day of class they have ever sat down and ever even been introduced to the remote viewing protocol. And basically it was an open search. An open search is basically, they were indirectly trying to teach by example, the students, the source of the information is intelligent and it's dynamic. An open search question is basically an ultimate form of question. It's basically, tell me something. The result was, and usually what you get is something that is extremely newsworthy, something that's going to happen within the next month or two, something that is so newsworthy it's almost international news. So what people were getting was an explosion, death, in a subway tunnel, people running everywhere, bright flashes underneath a big city. The city's flag had a lion on it, like a crowned lion. The city had two very large skyscrapers that were actually looked trapezoidal and tilted, etc. Not trying to get emotional about it, but 6 weeks later, the Madrid attack happened. And every piece of the data was pointing directly to Madrid. And one of the people said, you know, while we were reviewing the data and showing the analysis, saying, yes, an attack was going to happen, yes, this was going to happen, a lot of people were going to die, and it would be in a country that had this kind of flag and would be near a city with these unique architectural features, etc. Now, we could research this, and we could find out exactly where it is, when it's going to be, etc. But, A, nobody will listen to you, and B, we can't stop it because we already got the data. So,
this was an event that had already happened. It's just that your remote viewers saw it before it occurred.
Right, exactly. That's why I say it could not be prevented. It is, in essence, already happened. So, if you cue the information, you get those sorts of things like an open search. So if these remote viewers are doing open searches, they're going to get things of that nature. We're not sure why you get things of that nature, but they seem to be catastrophic, and they seem to be news-breaking, and they seem to be within the next month or two. You also get certain anomalies on very, very specific cues that are not open searches. For example, another in front of another remote viewing class, and these are beginning students, first day of class. I think this particular class was being held in Las Vegas, and this was 2 years ago, or maybe it was 4 years ago. Once I tell you the event, the audience will know. The students being in Las Vegas, they said, okay, Super Bowl is coming up. We want to know who's going to win the Super Bowl. Well, Super Bowl was happening that Sunday afternoon, and this was Sunday morning. They said, oh, that is such a simple cue. Okay, we'll do this for everybody so you can see the power of this. You'll know who wins this afternoon. So then we can spend the rest of the day actually learning more of the protocol and more of the skill. Well, the way he cued it so that nobody, because everybody knew who was playing the Super Bowl, but he had to keep them blind. In other words, they knew what they wanted. They wanted to know which team was playing the Super Bowl, but he couldn't ask them directly because they now knew that they were just students. Their own minds would get in the way. So they were given a question which they didn't know the answer to, basically a blind question. A number is assigned to the question. They were simply given the number. Well, the question assigned to the number, which they didn't know, was, you know, this current Super Bowl / winning team / home state most significant feature. Well, to everybody, you have different concepts of what's significant in that particular state. Well, in this particular state, it was Florida was the winner, and three-fourths of the class was getting the space shuttle flying up. But five people in the class literally got the space shuttle blowing up in midair. Well, they got the answer to their question, i.e., the state that the team belonged to, who was going to win the Super Bowl this afternoon, in the form of a space shuttle blowing up. It was trying to tell you that just a, you know, 2 weeks from now, it's going to explode. And again, we knew that during the class, and we actually have it on videotape, stating that, yes, there's nothing we can do about it. It's going to happen. That's just the way it is. And sure enough, it did. So you do get those anomalies sometimes. Now, in the military, this is, I'm giving you small examples because I'm coming up to a big example. In the military, and this is the same type of examples that other teams would pick up worldwide in other countries. They want to, military and governments want to look at global positions. They want big answers to big solutions decades down the road. Well, I am privy to very little of the details, but it is my understanding, with information I can't divulge, that the military picked up very, very large problems that were coming up in the near future, 15 years out, meaning approximately now in the next 5 to 10 years in the future. Very large global anomalies that were happening. In fact, they were so bad, so horrible, they assigned all sorts of horrible things to it. At first they thought it was nuclear war, then they thought it was solar flares, then they thought it was 300 mile an hour winds from the jet stream coming down and touching the deck, and it went on and on. They actually called it basically the equivalent of a rift in time. They couldn't understand what was happening, and everything seemed to be converging. So other agencies, I'm sure, groups in other countries, Russia, China, India, or other countries that would have remote viewing teams, would come across these same things and investigate them. So, yes, even though the information is provided to everybody equally, what you do with it as a people, as a society, is what sets you apart. And it appears as if, you know, I'm going out on a limb, but not too long of a limb, that previous civilizations actually knew what to do with it. They prepared and they planned and they gave hints and clues for future civilizations as what was happening. I don't think, because of the way our world is situated today with all the political problems and the various countries and how we're up at arms with each other, that as a society we would ever do that. So I do not think we're conditioned to, you know, pull together as a people, even if one team or more teams actually saw for, you know, what was coming over the horizon, so to speak. That is one of the primary reasons that the Horizon Project exists, in order to pull all of this information together ourselves and to present this to people.
So what you're saying is that in ancient times, when this kind of information was discovered through remote viewing or a system just about like it, this access to truth clued in the society that they had to get off planet or get to higher ground or do something because some global anomaly was coming. And, you know, when I look at things like the Mayan calendar, I see how well they articulated what was going to happen, the date that it was going to happen, and then they went through tremendous amounts of energy, spending, well, a significant part of their gross national product to artistically and architecturally not only inform their people, but leave something for us to see. Because there was really no reason for the Mayan calendar to end on December 21st, 2012, if they were going to be long gone. They left that calendar for a reason. And now, here we are with remote viewers regaining that skill, relearning that skill, and lo and behold, they're tapping into the same truth, because truth is unchanging and truth is truth, and they're coming up with the same anomaly, only now we don't have 1,000 years to prepare for it. We only have a few years to prepare for it. And what you're saying is that remote viewers, when they sit down at the table and they've got a task at hand, and all of a sudden this anomaly comes in, and it comes in on all of them, and they record it, and then they're trying to figure out what it is. We really have something significant happening here, do we not?
We actually do. It's the source of the information has no choice but to answer your question. But in answering your question, it can provide additional data, and that's what it gets. It gives you. I don't mean to do this, but I am projecting I'm implying that the source of the information is intelligent. It is. In everything I have seen, it is actually intelligent. It is not static. You brought up a very interesting point. The Mayan people, they did have many, many years of this sort of data collection mechanism at their disposal. It would not, obviously it's not remote viewing, but to access this background information. And you're right, you made a comment earlier that would not it be these people be considered holy or exceptionally gifted? Well, it makes sense that if you have a priest, not our modern day priest, but thousands of years ago, who had access to this information because he was directly connected to the source. Remember, he can't take credit for anything, and neither can a remote viewer today, because they're not doing anything. It's just like somebody opening up their eyes and seeing and reporting what they're seeing. They can't take credit for it. It's a gift we all have. They're just reporting what they're seeing. So the priests of ancient plus remote viewers today, they cannot actually take credit for the data. They're just simply reporting it. They're messengers. So when you run to the priest thousands of years ago and said, my flock of chickens is dying, what do I do? The priest goes to the source of the information, and it would seem almost godlike to a primitive society. And the priest comes back and says, okay, this is the problem. There's a particular plant they're eating, whatever it is, and this is what you need to do to correct it. Well, the priest doesn't know anything about chickens, yet he knows everything about everything. So the Akashic records refer to knowledge from the gods that is directly accessible by everyone. And what we have learned in remote viewing, and it's very interesting, this knowledge, if you ask a question and you formulate it so there is no ambiguity, and that's what we refer to as cueing, to define the question precisely, that's the first step. Once you define the cue and you ask it and start the remote viewing session, you get the answer within about a third of a second. It's not 10 minutes later, or you may get the answer it's equivalent to, say, I'll quote a phrase in the Bible, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be given to you, ask and it shall be given. But what we know as remote viewers, if you ask, you get the answer. There's no delay, there's no maybe, you get it instantly, and you get it in exact detail, in the proper context, within a third of a second. The entire remote viewing protocol is then taking that answer, which is impeded on your autonomic nervous system, and breaking it out through this protocol in all the bits and pieces, and then reassembling it into an answer us humans see and can analyze and can understand. So yeah, I suppose they would be seen as being able to be very gifted or even holy, and having access to this information for so many years, it would be accepted in their society, and that's why they would trust it to the point where they would expend those type of resources, building monuments and pyramids and sphinxes and Stonehenge and all sorts of artifacts scattered all around the globe, even in cities that are now buried under the ocean as a result of prior catastrophes, in order to warn us, all pointing to the same future event. But we are so blind, living day to day, you know, thinking about where we're going to go on our next vacation and a lot of important things, that we don't, as a society, step back and look at everything that is right underneath our feet.
You mentioned that this source of truth is intelligent, or actually intelligence. Now, we're not talking about the collective consciousness of all humanity, right?
No, we're not. I can give you a really good example of that. When remote viewing first started, the protocols first started now, in about 25 years ago, the questions were all directed around just basically the equivalent of a child asking a parent, where's my lost car keys? What's Hussein going to do next? Where's Osama bin Laden? Where is this? Tell me. And the answer would always come in. Hundreds of questions, hundreds of answers, all of them accurate, none of them varying. And so people would, but we would always know the answers to those questions. At some point in time, some human would know the answer to those questions. Until we started asking questions that no human could ever possibly know throughout all of time. An example would be, if I give a blind target to a person, i.e. I don't actually tell him the question, but show me the internal crystalline matrix structure of the largest boulder presently sitting on Pluto's surface right now. Well, no human on Earth could ever know that, because even if we discovered Pluto, 50 years from now, and we have civilization colonies all over the surface of that planet or moon or however you want to define it now, and how would they know hundreds of years ago what the crystalline structure of a rock was hundreds of years earlier? So in other words, that type of question could never ever be in all of human consciousness throughout all of time, yet you instantly get the answer. You can also ask questions about the internal thoughts of things that are not that you wouldn't characterize as human. Inside, what is if you give a target, for example, and it's really sad because you understand that life on this planet is so precious. You give a target to a person of, say, a puppy dog, a blind target, you don't tell them what it is, of a puppy dog sitting in a cage at the Humane Society. And what you get is the person who is the remote viewer undergoes incredible, the remote viewing target makes him upset. He says, well, they're not personally involved, but they say, well, this person, this thing is in trouble. It looks like he's in jail. He thinks he's going to die. They just took away one of his friends, and it's really a horrible thing. But when you interrogate, and that's the feeling that the dog is having. And then when you interrogate the person and say, okay, are you sitting down or are you standing up? Well, I'm actually kind of like crawling. Really? What do you look like? And then he'll draw himself as a dog. But My point is, the data does not come from human consciousness, because you can ask any question anywhere. So it comes from outside of time and human consciousness. And unlike human consciousness, where you're asking questions over and over again, and you're just getting raw, pat answers, if you step back and finally basically cue questions about, well, what do you think is the essence of the question? Instead of a child asking their father over and over again a million silly questions, and the father just patiently asking them for years, the child finally says, tell me what you think. The information you get back is absolutely amazing and mind-boggling, and it's tailored to you, and it's basically a dialogue. Where should I live? You know, what do you have in store for me? What's the best way to live my life? What's the best job, best location? There are so many things once you realize that remote viewing is a true connection to direct knowledge of a source of intelligence that wants to help you, that is very loving and wants to help you, and it's there to help you. The good, like you said, the good and the evil alike, because I'm not sure that we're not all bad. In many regards, we are all bad. So to a source of pure information, pure knowledge, we are probably all categorized the same way. It's we just personally, you know, separate that and categorize, well, this group of people is bad and this group of people is good. So the source of the information doesn't distinguish it, but it wants to give us all the opportunity to make all the right decisions. And so we can do with it what we want, such as
free agency. It's all about choice.
Yes, we have the choice, and it will provide us any information we ask, but we have to choose. It's up to us.
Right.
Now, if we make the wrong choice, then those doors close on us because time keeps moving and new choices pop up.
Right, you've moved down the hallway or down the arrow of time, and now you cannot, you know, go back and open that door again, because linearly you've passed that point to be able to access that particular information from that particular standpoint.
Right.
Viewpoint. Now it's no longer a future event, it's a past event.
Yes.
Now, just so we cover all the bases, we're not talking about the collective consciousness of humanity, we're not talking about channeling the dead or even accessing past lives here, right? We're talking about tapping into a pure intelligence that exists out of time, maybe interdimensionally, which is difficult for us three-dimensional beings to understand. This is the kind of source of information that we're talking about.
Right. We can rule out channeling and dead people or past lives immediately, because you can ask questions in the future. If you actually study channeling, which is an experience, and study people who talk about past lives and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
If you ask them, well, I need to find such and such. Well, let's assume that person died 20 years ago. I need to find such and such as a remote viewing target. They'll ignore your question and go back to what they know, which stopped 20 years ago. And you say, no, but I need to know this. And they'll ignore your question, and they can only relate whatever is channeling. I won't go into that, but whatever that is, and whatever dead or past lives are, that information seems to stop at the moment of their death. And it seems to only relate to what they personally know. But remote viewing has no limitations, not to one person or restricted to time. So we know it's not that, and we know it has no connection with that. Also, it's not an experience.
Well, let me just throw a little mix in here.
Okay.
Just because that's the way this radio program works sometimes.
All right.
We're talking about a human viewpoint of this kind of this remote viewing, this source of intelligence, this ability for single humans or groups of humans or even masses of humans to access the same truth from the same source. Is it peculiar only to humans, or is the intelligence accessible to even I'm just going to bring in alien races, people or beings that are or have visited this planet in the past, or are visiting it now, or will visit it in the future. Do they have access to this information as well?
That's an interesting question, and quite honestly, I don't know the answer. I wouldn't even happen to guess. No, I don't know.
The reason I'm asking it is because it seems as though prior to key events, cataclysms, visitations, man's toying with weapons of mass destruction, it seems like the frequency of UFO sightings, of interaction with alien races, seems to increase with it as well. And it's like these races of beings who evidently, and I use that word loosely, are coming to this planet, have access to some kind of broadcast that something is about to happen on this planet. They want to be here when it happens, or they want to try to help us survive it, or I don't even really know what all of their intentions are, but it appears, at least from communications that I've had from other guests on this program, that there are off-worlders besides humans who appear to have access to some information about what is going to happen to this planet, and they want to try to help certain groups or help the race survive. And that's the only reason why I bring it up. If this source of information is intrinsic, and it's true, and it exists out there not as some speed of light communication, but instantaneous, then it would seem that this energy or this information would be accessible to all beings.
Well, it seems to me, since we do know it is outside of time, that, and since our entire universe is in this, time-space sequential, I guess four-dimensional pattern, and the source of the information is, let's call it fifth-dimensional, for lack of a better word,
mm-hmm.
that anything built on the first four dimensions could access it. If we can access it, anything else. It's a logical leap, but I believe it's a leap that probably has some merit. I personally do not know whether it does, you know, if that is true or not. I can tell you what little information I do know. I do not investigate anything of the nature that you're talking about, but I can give you one example. During the Titan missile test, our missiles passed every possible scenario. Every possible launch test, every theoretical test, all the computer simulations. But when it came time to do a real launch, to actually launch them out of their silos and have them go across the Pacific and do a particular test, they wouldn't launch. And in fact, their memories were erased. The memory core inside the computer brain in the missile sitting in the silo was erased. Now, that is theoretically impossible based on all the backup systems. The military needed an answer. They wanted an answer. There is no possible solution to an answer other than the remote viewing team. And, of course, they were given the target blind. And they reported the information to the analysis, who then quite frankly said, "Thank you for the information. You're dismissed." And that information probably didn't go very far, because the information consisted of, well, our team came up with, basically, there are glowing energy spheres that swooped down, circled the missiles in their silo, erased their memory cores, and left. Now, these are people who are given the targets blind, absolutely blind, without the slightest knowledge of what the target was, and yet that was their answer. So, whatever intelligent protective forces are out there, some, I'm sure not all, but some seem to be helpful. and, you know, try to help out. Now, ironically, the missile started working, and our tests were very successful, and the missile started working the moment Russia had the equivalent counter technology. It's interesting that that missile would have changed, totally changed the balance of power during the Cold War if we were successful. And each time where the balance of power would have been altered so dramatically, like a missile like that, you know, the various countries' experiments would suddenly stop working until, of course, the other countries would keep up. So
it was almost just as important to maintain the balance so that a disaster would not occur. Because if things go, you know, so far out of balance and one country feels like it's backed into a corner and at an extreme disadvantage, they might do something rash. But as long as things were balanced and it's two giants sort of pushing against each other like sumo wrestlers, then no one's going to get thrown out of the ring.
Right. But I don't know where the line's drawn. Obviously, that's interference, intervention, but with a purpose. But we have free will. So where do you draw the line? I don't know. But what I do know is we can see what's coming down the road, and people need to prepare for it.
Well, the interesting thing is that although you really haven't done any research in this area, it appears as though some other force or some other intelligence received information that launch was going to happen and that would destabilize the balance of power, and they use their freedom of choice, and their ability to affect the outcome, to change the outcome and rebalance the situation.
Yeah, it seems like that is what's been happening, yes.
Well, I've got to take another break here for about 4.5 minutes, but I want to get back into this because not so much on the alien sources, but I want to get into the nature of the source itself, because it seems, especially this time of the year, we, as religious people, as sort of philosophers, as scientists, we are looking for the nature of the universe, and as religious leaders, we're looking for the nature of God and the nature of this intelligence. I want to get into a little bit more detail on that. But first, and we'll get to that right after we take these two commercials and a 43-second musical interlude. Hey, you own an inkjet printer, right? Well, I used to buy my inkjet cartridges at a national chain store that will remain unnamed for about $35 per cartridge. The color and black cartridges together ran about $80. Well, no more. I discovered a great place to buy printer supplies at 123 Inkjet. They not only provide exceptional quality and fast shipping, every time I buy, I get a chance to win a free printer. And in April, they're giving away 5 printers a day. So stop paying high prices. Visit 123 Inkjet at X Squared Radio today and start saving money. If you like wildlife art and would love to add some of the most beautiful replicas to your home or office, you should visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio. They have everything from pandas to fish to eagles to horses in all sizes and price ranges. No matter what animal you love the most, or that left one, they have the art for you. So visit Wildlife Gifts at X Squared Radio for that special someone today. And there is some place you should visit before the end of next week. The Horizon Project is probably the most important examination of future Earth events in the world today. But there is a reason you should visit their website soon. I can't give you all the details here, but I can tell you that the first DVD in the multi-part series is now available for pre-purchase at a $5 off discount. This series will no doubt be airing on important channels like the History Channel and the Discovery Channel, but you need the uncut version with all of the bonus material. Trust me, it may be one of the most important purchases you ever make. Click on the Horizon Project banner at X Squared Radio today and find out more about the Horizon Project. You know, we have revealed to you the ancient predictions that natural disasters are going to increase in power and frequency in these times. We might not always have the National Weather Service or the Emergency Broadcasting Service, so you might want to get your hands on some of the best weather reporting instruments around. Visit Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio and pick up something that might be useful. They also have the neatest gift for your favorite people who like things for the outdoors or for their meditation garden. Check out Wind and Weather at X Squared Radio. And we will take a 43-second musical interlude and be right back with our guest, Brent Miller, on X Squared Radio. And welcome back, Earth Explorers, to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. In here, the results are always positive. I'm your host, Brooke Fagnew, and our guest tonight is Brent Miller. We're discussing remote viewing and some very interesting aspects of that. In this hour, we're going to talk about maybe what many might consider the more spiritual aspects of this discovery and this technology, and maybe what it can do for us as not only individuals, but as heads of households or supporters of our family or children or communities or members of our country and, more importantly, members of our planet. I know that you're going to enjoy this section, and I do want you to participate. If you're listening live between 5 and 8 o'clock Eastern Time, here on Sunday evening, April 16th, you can call in at 888-268-4313. That number is posted on the website from which you are accessing this broadcast if you're listening live. If you're listening to the rebroadcast or you're listening at work or in your vehicle, I want you to take the time to write us an email. Put your thoughts together. Take some time, your particular situation, your particular thoughts, write us an email at info@x2-radio.com. Tell us what you think. Give us your ideas, because we're going to follow up on this, and there's a lot more to come on this subject. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of this technology and your efforts to obtain it for yourself. Now, Brent, I want to ask you, I know you've given me the technical description of what the source is, but the experience of communicating, I should put that in a different way, the experience of receiving the information has got to have its own effect, sort of like the observation effect in science. So what is your best description of the source of that experience? What is it like?
I'll tell you in one word. It's, in my humble opinion, and the years I have been doing this, it's angelic. The source of the data is angelic. It is not static. It has your best interest in mind, and its answer is absolutely complete, accurate, with no preconceived notions, and it's the same for everyone. So everyone has the opportunity to ask whatever questions they desire, and they get the questions they desire. One of the answers they desire. One of the first things any remote viewer learns, first of all, they start out by saying, and like most of your audience, they'll start out by being skeptics. And that doesn't matter whether you're a skeptic or not. The source of the information doesn't care either whether you're a skeptic. You still get the answer, and you still are able to do it. So they start out by saying that this is impossible, it can't be done. Once they're actually shown, and they are actually doing it, then they say, okay, where's the information coming from? So what remote viewers have been doing, thousands of remote viewers over the last 20 years, is trying to interrogate the source of the data itself. And the best analogy I can come up with is angelic. And you can ask for various sources of various subject matter, and you get exactly, for instance, I see a painting, because we do this in remote viewing so that we can test our own skills to make sure we're getting the right data and analyzing and understanding the data. Remember, because if we get information that our minds can't comprehend, we really don't have a true grasp of the information we're getting. We're only getting an analogy. Let me give you an example of that in just one moment. So I will have a photograph, and I will... It's not a photograph. It's an actual drawing that a person drew that's in a magazine. And I will say, that particular photograph, the source of that photograph. And what do you get? You get a person sitting at a table drawing it out. You do the target again. What is the origin of that photograph? Well, it's his own thoughts in his head. You are now in his head going through the exact sequence of everything he thought. And you're writing that down. Remember, there are no secrets. So now when you basically interrogate the matrix itself or the Akashic Records and ask for the source, you get the information you get, whereas maybe us humans can't relate to it too well, is love and understanding and compassion. And one particular phrase that keeps coming up all the time, at least with me and what I've seen, is the Comforter. Which is a very strange type of connection, because Jesus said that when he left, he would send the Comforter in order to comfort you, I suppose. Maybe the source of the information, in the most crude layman terms, is the little voice deep, deep, deep in the back of your mind that tells you the difference from right and wrong. You know, little kids, as they're born and are growing up, they're just supposed to know what is right and what is wrong. But it's more than that. It's the source of knowledge for everything. So the source does, in my opinion, and in the opinions of many, many remote viewers, it is angelic, and it doesn't matter what your beliefs are. One interesting lady who was learning remote viewing, and I have no idea why she actually came up to me, looks me square in the eyes. Remember, we're teaching remote viewing, nothing else. She looks square in my eyes and says, I am an atheist and I'm proud of it. And I said, that's okay. And she goes, well, what do you think about that? And I said, that's okay. If you intend on getting good at remote viewing and you learn over time that you always get the right answer, and you will, I think you'll change your mind about that. And she says, there's nothing in the world that could make me change my mind. And ironically, a few hours later, because it was getting near Easter, the subject was Jesus of Nazareth / death event. Not the death itself, but the entire unfolding event. Golgotha, the soldiers, everything. And this lady, who is a self-proclaimed atheist, I could not believe what an absolutely good remote viewer she was. She had perfect sessions. She like wrote everything out perfectly, you know, a man who was dying on the cross, the Son of God ascended, and it was like amazing. And on Golgotha with soldiers, and you know, and it was like, it was the whole sequence unfolded and everything. And so, you know, the source of the information doesn't really care what your opinion is. If you ask, you're going to get the answer. If you don't want the answer, that's your free will, your choice. You can throw it out. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the source what you do with the answer. It might matter later down the road in terms of eternity if you use information that's pure versus your own thoughts. I'm not really going anywhere with this, but I'm saying there must be a reason for this particular ability and this particular knowledge and the fact that we can access it. If there wasn't a reason, like there's no wasted energy in the universe from a physics standpoint. So that being the case, there's a reason for it. Now, if we still have free will and we choose to ignore it, there might possibly be consequences. I don't know. I'm not a philosopher. I'm primarily an engineer and a seeker of truth, but I am somewhat of a philosopher. In fact, I want to know answers to these, but there's more answers than I can get answered in the amount of time that I feel that we have left. So I'm going after the most important things to me and that I feel are most important to most people. But you did ask probably one of the most important questions. What is the source of the information? I do believe it's angelic. It is a source that I would call the Comforter. It is mostly static to people because they ask the same questions over and over again, but it is dynamic and always the same, and it's outside of time.
Well, one of the things that I find interesting is that all people, whether they're a primitive Indian tribe or whether they're the ancient Mayans or modern people, and even atheists, we're all seeking some kind of advisors on how to make decisions in our lives. We want to know what career to pursue. We want to know who to marry, where to live, and when to plant crops, or when to make investments. We buy almanacs, we go to fortune tellers, we have our horoscopes read, and of course we pay billions of dollars each year to various prognosticators, and the ones that are right, as you said, 1 or 2% of the time, they get all the fame and all the money. But the point is that human beings have an inner desire, an inner nature about them to reach beyond what they see with their eyes, what they hear with their ears, what they feel. Even though they're atheistic, they don't want to believe that there's a God, maybe because they don't want to feel guilty about things, but they all feel as though there is some extra source of information, some extra source of advantage or foreseeing or reasoning that they're trying to tap into. And the fact that you describe this experience, this source of information, as being angelic, and the description of the story of the atheistic woman having a very theistic experience leads me to believe that maybe all life is valuable, just as I suspected. It also leads me to believe that, just like you said, maybe the source of information is trying to give every possible chance for that person receiving that information to redeem themselves, to make a good decision or a right decision, with that information that they're getting. Because the event has already happened, like you said. It has already occurred, and we are on the arrow of time heading for that event. But the experience is a spiritual experience. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Because I don't know how else to describe it. You really do question the source of the information once you start learning it. Not question the accuracy, but you question where it's coming from. And you can't help but wonder, because it proves to us that being human is more than being physical. There is something else that's part of us that's connected to something that's invisible. Otherwise, how else could we, you know, do what we're able to do?
Well, that is the logic, is how else would we be able to do what we do if that information was not, in fact, accessible outside of time, instantaneously, by anyone, qualified or unqualified, to make this, and I should use that word qualified, I mean canonized or uncanonized, they could reach out into this maelstrom of intelligence. They can tap into it, and they can bring that knowledge home to them, either in the form of a picture that they're drawing or words that they're writing out. And anyone, regardless of their intention of what they're going to do with this information, can get the same data, right?
Yes, yes. And they do get the same data, exactly the same data.
Hmm.
But the data, remember, the source is intelligent, and it has your best interest in mind. So that if the information needs to be altered to you for your specific needs, it will, with the absolute best interest of you in mind. For instance, it knows all your capabilities and everything around you. So that when you ask a question, and it knows that, well, if you had $1 million, you could go out and do this, and that really would be the better choice. The source is not going to tell you to do that, even if you ask point blank, because it knows it's not possible. It's not within your ability.
Right.
Because
so
it would be cruel.
Dollars.
Yeah. So what it does, it tells you precisely what can be done with all the possible variations that it sees at your disposal. So, and, you know, it is a loving source, and yes, it treats everyone equally and provides them the best possible ability to make decisions based on the information.
And that's what is known as this optimal trajectory, right?
Right. One of the most powerful cues, in fact, Brooks, you just related to it just a little while ago when you said that throughout time and throughout cultures, people have sought advisors to help them make decisions. This is no different, but this advisor gives the perfect answer, customized and tailor-made to you. And yes, everybody in life has the same primary goals. What's my best career, my mate, my location to live, financial investments? We all have the same needs and desires to love and be loved and have a purpose in life. This source can be your best advisor, and It is an exceptional source of information and tailor-made to each person based on their capabilities and what they're able to do.
Well, let's talk about how that question is asked. I know we have alluded to it a couple times in the first hour, briefly in the second hour, but we are cautioned in ancient writings not to, quote, counsel the Lord. Don't tell the intelligence what you have to know. The questions that you have described a good remote viewer asking or being trained to ask are open-ended questions, and they're designed to bring in information that allows you to ask the next question so that you can zero in on the target. So in the next, I don't know, 35 minutes or so, let's see what that is like. When you're starting with a blank slate, you're sitting down to to do remote viewing, you have no preconceptions, you don't have a, well, you might be looking for a missing child, but let's open it up even bigger than that. Let's talk about the anomalies that might come in. You've opened up your mind, you've asked this open-ended question, and something completely unexpected comes in. How do you follow that to the answer?
Okay. Remote viewing is, for a topic like that, open-ended. An open-ended discussion is the most complex form of question because you don't even know the question. You are getting data that corresponds to the answer. But what's the question? So you have two pieces of the puzzle to connect to. My prior example of the Madrid attack was an open-ended question. So the data started coming in, and with the combined overlapping data of the entire class, it was very clear there was going to be like an explosion in tubes underneath a city where people moved in and out of, and the city was located in a certain area that was identified by this particular type of flag and had these, the nearest significant recognizable structures were these particular trapezoidal type archetypes. Well, there was only one place on Earth and it happened. Now, an open search gives you that kind of information, and in order to zero in on that particular data, we would take what we refer to as the site templates. They are pictorial diagrams with the key tangibles, intangibles, AIs and EIs, emotions at the site. Showing a pictorial diagram of the various data points collected representing the answer. But remember, we don't know the question. This is probably why, when you do an open-ended search, you get this, because the source knows you don't know the question, so it just simply gives you something that you'll be able to easily recognize in the near future. If we wanted to continue that, we could actually take the site template, target, like you said, target individual aspects such as the trapezoidal pyramid, trapezoidal-shaped skyscrapers. Well, I call them skyscrapers, but you don't have any preconceived notions. There were buildings, structures. So these structures, you could target them, locate them on Earth, find out what they're used for, locate the tubes underground, find out what they're used for, find out more details about the flag, and you could quickly zero in. To give you an example, a real-world example that is very sad, everyone knows that 2 years ago on December 26th, a level 9 earthquake hit Indonesia, and it caused a devastating tsunami. A level 9 earthquake, for the audience, is, for those who don't know, is an incredibly powerful earthquake. There's very, very few level 9s on this planet in the last 100 years. It's a logarithmic scale, so every digit is 10 times more powerful than the one before it. All of geological sciences will say and tell people that once you have a level 9, a very large earthquake, it's the result of the stresses building up over decades. It builds to the point where you have to release the pressure, and during the release, so much energy is expelled that this is what causes the earthquake, and the magnitude of the releasing energy corresponds to a certain Richter scale number, in this case 9. Mm-hmm. Once the energy is released, it takes decades, if not hundreds of years, to build back up again. So the idea of having two level 9s in the same area, very, very close in proximity, time-wise, to each other, is literally absurd and unheard of. Immediately after the level 9 earthquake in Indonesia, Ed Dames, and he did this strictly by himself with no outside help from the team. He is a, you know, incredibly good professional remote viewer and a mentor. What he wanted to know was the next earth-changing catastrophic event. And he again got the same thing, a level 9 earthquake in the Indonesia area in March, which is only 3 months later. He announced that on the Art Bell show just 4 days after the first Indonesia earthquake. Of course, the geology community laughed him to scorn. 3 months later, they weren't laughing when a level 9 earthquake again happened in March in the Indonesia area. So this, the source of the information doesn't care what your feelings are, and Ed himself cannot take credit for anything, because it's simply opening your eyes, which we all can do, and see, basically gathering the information and writing it down. But am I still with you?
Yeah, that just indicates we have a caller on the line. Caller, where are you calling from? What's your first name?
Well, actually, this is Don.
Oh.
I just, if a caller does call in, you want me to just break in this way?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay. You know, I have a question. If you can do actually do this type of information, gather this type of information accurately, which it seems is possible, then wouldn't you then take a team and map out and ask a question like major event 2006, major event 2007, major event 2008. You see what I'm saying?
Right.
And map it out, and then maybe say second major event, third major event, and then map out what you think a chronological timeline is up to, let's call it, the end of the Mayan calendar. Or, you know, because that has spiritual significance. But I'm just thinking, why wouldn't you guys do that? Or have you done it? I would think that that would be the natural thing you would do. I'll let you go to answer that question.
Actually, that's a very good question.
Great question.
We have never done that, and there's a couple reasons for it. The primary question is, we are honestly too busy in doing other things. Right now, we just finished up we didn't finish it up, we're still in the process of locating a missing child. And we zeroed in on her with two separate teams working independently to the exact same 150-foot spot on Earth. And drawing exactly the details of it, getting the satellite photos overhead, which match all the session data. So without a doubt, we know exactly where the child is located. And this takes about a week to do. While we're doing that, there's another 100 requests coming in for different reasons.
You know, I can understand that.
Yeah. And
but wouldn't you think it would be, like, optimally important to do something like this?
That is the purpose of the Horizon Project, yeah, and that is why the Horizon Project is an independent project.
Ah, excellent.
Yeah. That
tell us about that project.
Exactly.
Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
Well, yeah, we're going to cover that last 20 minutes or so.
Okay. But yeah, the Horizon Project is primarily scientific data merged with remote viewing as a tool to pull together information to answer some of these big questions. To actually create the timeline, since the majority of the efforts are actually creating the sequence of events, not necessarily in a timeline, but the importance of why we're here, where we're going. You know, are we more than the sum of our parts? Are we more than truly physical? Most of the efforts have been put into that. And the first episode it really is starting out with a chronological history of Earth and disasters and, you know, what is coming. And there is so much information that is available. We don't even know where to begin. There is just too much. And the Horizon Project will be a series of DVDs. And we are very excited that, you know, to even be able to present this. And we're just thankful that we have the resources and things have worked out for us in order to put this together. But there are, as you just indicated, there are far more questions that people need to know or want to know than there is time to do it. It takes time to do a remote viewing session. It is a skill. And there are more questions that you need answered and that you want answered than you have time. So you have to be very careful to pick and choose what is important at that moment in time. Of course, you want to do 10 other things, but you do have to choose. So,
and this is the kind of the nature of why this ends up in the way that it ends up. Because we want to know as individuals. I mean, if I were an individual and I'm interested in learning how to do remote viewing, I'm interested in questions like, what do I do when I grow up? You know, where should I live? Who should I marry? You know, they say
behind every successful man is an astonished mother-in-law. Well, you know, I think that behind every successful man, there should be the ability to know his path, know his purpose on the earth, and to pursue that with vigor and with excitement and purpose. And that's the individual level. And then you have, just as Don asked the question, you've got this question on the level of the human race. What can we do as teens after we find out what we want to be when we grow up and where we're supposed to live and who we're supposed to marry? Those important questions. How do we build a team, a global team, that can work with teens and make this work light enough so that we can get the kinds of answers that Don was alluding to, like what is the major event that's going to occur in 2007, and the second, and the third, and the fourth, so that individuals can say, well, gee, I don't want to live then where that asteroid is going to hit or where that tidal wave is going to occur. I want to move my family and my loved ones away from that area. Or better yet, I want to tell everybody to move away from that area, if it's possible. Just the way Ed Gaines did.
Right. Yeah, it's the first step is to get people to learn remote viewing so that they can take care of their own lives.
Exactly.
And some people, you know, some people want to be shown over and over again, and they don't want to take, they actually want to be in the advisor position where they ask an advisor and an advisor tells them. Well, it just doesn't work when you want to ask questions every day of your life and get direct knowledge. You have to learn this skill yourself so that you can ask the question. I had one young lady came up to me, actually it was her boyfriend, I mean her, I guess you would call it husband, I mean they weren't legally married, but husband. And I did his cue for him, and I didn't know his girlfriend. I had no idea who she was. And the question was, what is my girlfriend's optimum trajectory / career? In other words, what is the most perfect career for her? Well, even though I knew the question, I don't know her, and it's not important whether I know her. I did the remote viewing protocol and session, and 30 minutes later, I hand him the sketch of the details of a machine. I shrug my shoulders. I have no idea what that is. I don't know. It doesn't make sense to me. It's a machine, but that's exactly the way it looks, and it's supposed to look like that. In the similar way that Savannah came up to me and said, I don't know why those lines are all over the faceplate of your palm, but they're supposed to be there. He faxes it to his girlfriend in Milwaukee, and she says, oh my God, I've always wanted one of these. You know what? I could start a felt business with one of these. I've always, since a childhood, I've wanted one. She knew what it was. It was a particular machine in England which created felt products. And that was like her dream job. I mean, everybody has their dream job, I guess. So she did exactly that. She went into business for herself. She got the machine. She went into business. She's extremely happy, ecstatic. So the source, you need to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people. And it's important with upcoming events, you really need to know this skill in order to take care of your loved ones and where you're going to live and how you should protect yourself. So the bigger questions about the exact chronology, to me, it is important to get that out. And that is what the Horizon Project is trying to do. But we cannot answer or even start to address the thousands of questions that need to be addressed. So we've picked on some of the bigger topics and are addressing those.
Well, I guess what the point I was trying to bring across is while you're doing this individual search, these anomalies will make themselves known. I guess it's like you haven't asked the question, but here's a piece of information that you need.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this, okay, a person doing remote viewing comes across knowledge that there's a coming global cataclysm. Let's say the close path to Earth with a large heavenly body, large enough to severely disturb the crust of the planet. they've received this information, they've drawn it out, maybe there's a team concentrating on one thing and getting this global anomaly, and now that the primary target has been addressed, now they've gone back to address this anomaly. This is what the Horizon Project, at least from what I understand, what you've described to me, what it's going to try to do for planet Earth. That the reason this project was formed was because the anomalous information that remote viewing teams was getting was so powerful and so global that something had to be done.
The remote viewing anomalies are actually there. I'll give you a perfect example dealing with a very specific, like an individual, at an individual level, and how an individual gets this type of global anomaly. But before I do that, the original intent of the Horizon Project was created not with remote viewing in mind, actually. It was created to actually pull together scientists and researchers and linguistics and linguists and people, scientists from all over the world, to basically to pull them together on one table, in essence, because they all had their theories about everything, and their theories contradicted each other. So who's right and who's wrong? If you get them together and they can share information, then you can quickly determine which theories are definitely wrong, throw them out, and move on. You can quickly get to the truth faster. Remote viewing is used in order to facilitate that. But what remote viewing knows is that there are gaps in human history. And when all these individuals get together and they compare the notes, there's gaps in the geological record. There's gaps in why are these ancient cities buried under the bottom of the ocean? Oh, and they're not destroyed by a volcano. They're totally intact. The cities are as large as New York City, and they're on the bottom of the ocean. They're not grass huts. Something major happened. So the Horizon Project's initial episode coming out addresses these major gaps in human history. And yes, remote viewing is a tool, and it's a very important tool, but it's not the primary tool. We use scientific evidence and research in many fields as the primary tool. But what you said is very true. A person, even now, because we are getting close to the end, a person who is wanting to use this for his own personal reasons will see these anomalies. A person wanting to use this for their own personal reasons 20 years ago could never see an anomaly, but they see it now. Let me tell you what happened just about a year ago.
Yeah.
A 20-year-old college student wanted to know what their optimum trajectory was. And they wanted to know basically the things you just asked for. Advice on who to marry, where to live, you know, what career to pursue, etc. I said, so what is the most important thing for you? He says, well, I'm in college. I'm halfway through college. I don't know what career to pursue. And I have to make some life-changing decisions here. I mean, second year of college, you have to decide your specialty. But he didn't ask the question. You get what you ask for, precisely. Your intent is meaningless. The question that was asked, that I asked for him, was his name, optimum trajectory, career. A career is a lifelong thing. You can't have a career, you know, 1 or 2 years out of college. It's 3 or 4 years out of college. So we're talking a span of maybe 7 to 10 years
right. From
the day he asked me. And, well, of course, what I expected to get was what everybody gets, you know, this job, that city, and they're wonderful, and they just match their personality, and they never would have thought of it in a million years. But that's not what we got. We got something literally terrifying. We got him in an underground bunker. That's not a career. What it's saying is that there's no time for a career. The question is moot. You need to look at this. This is far more important than trying to pursue a career, because there isn't one left for you. Now, we have, since we take that being an anomaly, we take that and, of course, investigate it very thoroughly in many different areas, and we see that time is short and there is something serious. So the anomalies are important. In terms of, you know, who to marry, where to live, oh, absolutely. It gave it to him right away. Move here, you'll be safe, this is the perfect girl for you, and obviously what is optimum for you is optimum for her. It doesn't mean you'll be perfectly happy in life, but in terms of spiritual growth, this is the most ideal person in the absolute long-term scheme of things.
I am almost positive, just based on my own personal experience, that I don't really want to share on the radio, but also the experience of other people that I've known, as they've made this same eternal inquiry, you know, what, where, who do I marry, what do I be, and all of a sudden, what they get back is a blank slate. In other words, when others your age are expecting to be managers or CEOs or owning their own companies or whatever, you're going to be in an underground bunker trying to survive with your family. Well, that would seem to indicate more than just, say, a local tornado. It would be something regional, almost something so calamitous that there would be no way to survive on the surface of the planet for that person for whatever period of time we're talking about. But he's not the only person that receives answers like that. I know someone who had a series of answers that they got totally unexpected. And where they pictured themselves was standing on a busy city street with skyscrapers all around, with glass and stone and smoke and water falling out of the sky all around them. And where they found themselves was on the streets of New York City during the 9/11 attacks, 2 months before it happened. So the fact that the truth is out there, that it is being revealed to people in these open-ended questions like, what is my optimum trajectory? And these are the kinds of answers that they're getting. And I'll put it this way. The frequency and intensity with which those answers are being received is increasing by the day. That truth, that information is being poured out upon everyone, and using their own family traditions or their own training or their own, like the 10-year-old girl, you know, using her symbolism, we all use our own symbolisms to try to explain what that means. But the interesting thing that you bring up about remote viewing is the fact that there is a protocol, and that when used in teams, the information gets tremendously much more clear and much more precise and much more repeatable. Even if you have two teams working on the same answer, they get the same answer. Is that right?
Right. It could even be two people. Or if you don't have that luxury, it literally could be yourself doing the same target twice. But don't do them side by side, because your mind's going to remember and your own mind's going to interfere.
Right.
Just separate them in a bunch of different target folders and shuffle them and only do information that you want. And when you do two targets that are similar, then compare them, and the overlapping data is accurate, 100% accurate.
Well, if you had a message that you could broadcast to the world right now, knowing what you know and suspecting what you suspect, what would it be?
The future is 99% written. What is coming over the horizon can't be stopped. It will be here whether you believe it or you don't believe it. The most important thing is that you know how to protect yourself. There is a reason for everything. It doesn't have to catch you unawares, and you don't have to suffer unnecessarily when it comes. It is important that you find out, and the information's available to you. You can learn remote viewing. You can ask the questions yourself. There is no reason why you should, you know, be in the dark or look for, you know, look for advisors when there aren't going to be any to have, because the information is available for you. And it's not in the form of soothsayers or psychics. It's in the equivalent, and I hate to say this because I don't want to sound religious, but it's in the equivalent of seeking angelic guidance. The equivalency is a close to prayer, but it's an instantaneous, immediate answer, and it's tailor-made for you, and it has your best heart and soul in mind. How much better could things be?
And what people have to learn is this protocol, and what is the best way, because I'm assuming that through trial and error, you're going to discover some of it, because that's how it was discovered in the first place, but how can they cut this learning curve down and master these skills as quickly as possible?
Well, when it was first discovered that this was even possible about 25 years ago, the protocol was 35% accurate, and over tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of sessions and variations of what works, what doesn't work in creating a sequence. The sequence is refined to the point of 80%. They can't make it better. It seems as if the human mind just interjects 20% error. But remember, you are on 80% of the time, which means you have the answer all the time. And you can tell, if you do the session, what is error, what is not. You have to start. You have to learn how to basically ask a proper question and get the answer. The most refined and most accurate and easiest system to learn remote viewing today is a course. It is a menu-driven, makes use of the DVD menuing system with a structured lecture, a narrator coming in, getting you set up for your lesson. You have all your templates in front of you. It goes through the whole thing. You actually do the cue and the target with the students on the TV, and you get the feedback. And you can compare your feedback with theirs, and you learn. And you, with each new target, you learn more, and your subconscious learns. And by the time you're done with the course, you can then go off and ask any question, and you, at the same time, with unlimited online training, you meet hundreds of people who are remote viewers who are learning, and you form together teams and help each other. So it's not just you being independent, it's a community, and there's a staff of professional remote viewers at learnrv.com in order to help you to learn as well.
You know, I have a question. If you could learn that, if you can actually learn, then you could also ask the question as to where can I maximize my earnings?
People use it to make money all the time.
Really? And it works.
In fact, I have done that. I am guilty of that. And in fact, I actually felt guilty when I was doing that, because I lived in Las Vegas for a little while because my girlfriend lives there and my parents live there. And while I was there, I would actually... And it was not betting, because if you know the outcome, it's not betting, and that's why I felt guilty. I won thousands and thousands of dollars on sporting events, you know, without the slightest hesitation as to who was going to win. I knew who was going to win, because you just remote view the session. 20 minutes later, you put down your bet. 3 hours later, you'll pick up your winnings. I have won the California Daily 3 lottery 8 times. Now, it's 3 single digits. The odds of winning it once are 1,000 to 1. The odds of winning it any of the times are 1,000 to 1. But every single time I would put down my dollar, which is a 500-to-1 return with Parimutuel, I knew I was going to win because that was the result of a remote viewing session.
By the way, the odds of winning 8 times are 10 to the 24th to 1.
Yeah, you do feel guilty. But yes, people use it in futures trading. People use it in stock market. One gentleman, he had a lack of money and he needed some money, and he said his name /Optimum Near Term Investment. Optimum, of course, is please look at every possible situation that I personally can get into and tell me what I can do right now in order to make the maximum amount of money in the shortest amount of time. And he got the strangest thing. He got wheat fields. And so he targets specifically the wheat fields and gets the impression that it's just pure wheat, nothing else, wheat. So he buys a ton of commodities, futures in wheat. 1 month later, a freezing in Canada wiped out their entire wheat field. So within a month, he made $250,000. You know, and this is what you can use remote viewing for that. After a while, you think it's exciting and you think it's fun, but after a while, you realize that, wait a minute, there's more to life. You can ask anything. If you really think about it, you can ask anything in the world. What truly is the most important questions in life? That is what the Horizon Project is centered around. And you can read more about the Horizon Project at, I don't believe we've mentioned it before, but it's at thehorizonproject.com. So yeah, people have used it to make money. If you're into the stock market, for example, and you want to make the maximum amount of money you can at any given point in time, every morning when you wake up, you do the following cue for the first hour of the day. You do your name, because your name means it's tailor-made to you within your capabilities, / Dow Jones Industrial Average, / Optimum Investment. All right, DJ is about 30 stocks. So you have just limited it to 30 stocks. Which stock will make me the optimum short-term investment? You want to go short-term investment. You don't want to leave anything to chance. Oh, and then what you do is you say / manufacturer's most recognizable product, for example. And that would be your entire queue. And then you run the queue, and you get this little box on the wall. Well, you target the box, and you redo the queue and discover it's a thermostat. You investigate your 30 companies, and you discover that Honeywell is the only one who makes 30 thermostats. So you put all your money in Honeywell, and the price goes up and up and up. And you keep doing that queue every morning, and every morning you get the box on the wall. Now, because it's still the optimal, the moment another one becomes optimal, all of a sudden the answer changes. Now we have a refinery. All right, take all your money out of Honeywell, put it in Exxon, that sort of thing. So, yes, people do use remote viewing for, their finances as well.
So there's your answer. But what we're trying to do, at least in this program, I mean, sure, it would be nice to make everybody that listens to this program rich. I'd be the most popular radio program on the planet. But where I feel compelled, knowing what we've learned, the last 3 hours on this program, is that this is how the human race has survived from cataclysm to cataclysm. We see the granite and sandstone remnants of their efforts in this field. And although they didn't call it remote viewing, the source of truth was still there. They were still able to access it in their own way with their own protocols. And they were able to survive. The fact that we see whole cities without a trace, without hundreds and hundreds of thousands of bodies laying around, we see a few princes and a few kings and a few rulers and a few families here and there, but we don't see the tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, tens of millions of people and their belongings. They're gone. They left, which means that they had some kind of prior information, and it had to come from this kind of source that we're talking about. So if, and this is an assumption, if we are truly in the end times, then we are talking about activities that the human race must participate in as a group, as a team, as a family, as a race, in order to survive. And that's what I think we're talking about here, right?
I think that's what we're talking about, too. And I think it's very ironic that this skill after thousands of years, that this skill and this knowledge and ability starts to resurface right at the very end of the Mayan calendar. It's interesting that we don't have the luxury of having been born in a society that could directly access this. But we have to use what we have now so that we can move forward. It is a human evolution consciousness tool that will help us to gain direct knowledge in order to survive and to fulfill, without sounding cheesy, our destiny and what is planned for us.
Well, it's also my experience as an executive manager in manufacturing that if you give people too much time to plan, years or decades, they don't begin until the end. So it is perhaps fortuitous, ironic maybe, but nevertheless probably useful that we are receiving the opportunity to learn this skill at this time, so close to the end, so that maybe we don't get so distracted that we say, well, there's plenty of time for 8 or 9, you know, major vacations before this happens, and then we'll start concentrating on it. The time is now, I believe, to start concentrating on these skills, learn these skills as quickly as possible, join with teams, join with families, go to learnrv.com and do your best to try and pick up these skills as quickly as you can. Our guest tonight on X-Squared Radio has been Brent Miller. He is the host of the Horizon Project. He's the director, the writer of it. I've had very minor involvement with it, but I have thoroughly enjoyed what I have learned about it, and I want to become more involved with it. I think it's probably the most important independent work that's being done on the planet today. We just have a couple of minutes, and I would like to remind you that next week our guest is going to be Tracy Twyman, and her outstanding research on Freemasonry and secret societies seeking power in today's world. So I want you to remember, Earth Explorers, who you are, and that everything we do will eventually affect the universe. So try to do it on purpose every day. And remember, every life is immensely valuable. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day. And before long, then it helps to save the planet. And this is X Squared Radio. I'm Brooks Agnew. Peace, Earth Explorers, and good night. Good night, friends.
Good night, and again, thank you.
You're very welcome.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.